thank you for listening to this Belly Up Sports Podcast Network product. Some said we go belly up, so we made it our name, and we're still here.
Sports fans, it's a dark time for the Rebellion. We are Atlanta's own. I'm not going to do the normal chipper, what's up, Atlanta sports fan introduction, because I'm a little pissed off by recent events that have happened to our beloved and tortured Atlanta Falcons. I am Graham Waldrop. Alongside me, as always, is Adam Kalau. No middle name, no nickname. And we are Atlanta's own, two Atlanta natives, recapping the week that was in Atlanta professional sports. Wacky ass hijinks and analysis presented by Belly Up Sports. Adam, how's it going, sir?
I'm doing okay, Graham.
You doing okay?
Got a first place baseball team.
That's the good news. Thank
just
God for the Braves.
Well run, well managed. You know, when the Braves surprise us, it's generally for the best, pulling off a deal that just completely out of left field.
Or failing miserably to the Phillies in the NLDS 2 years in a row.
Well, you know. We're talking off-season.
Off-season.
Off-season
stuff.
Oh, yeah,
sure, sure.
Yeah, Graham, this feels like a very, very special anticipated episode of Atlanta Zone, because a lot of people that know you also know how you feel about what happened last night.
Yeah.
Last night will go down in infamy.
Yes.
I think. For Atlanta sports. Either could be the best thing ever. You never know.
But so let's talk about the elephant in the room. The Falcons, the first round last night, the 2024 NFL draft, I feel like Roger Goodell, took Michael Penix Jr. at number 8, even though they've already signed Kirk Cousins to a 4-year, $180 million deal with $90 million or $100 million guaranteed in the first 2 years.
Well, Graham, break it down for, you know, some users on the West Coast that don't understand. Michael Penix, what position does he play?
He plays quarterback.
And Kirk Cousins, what position does he play?
Quarterback.
Interesting. Okay.
So, in a complete overhaul of the position, where Desmond Ridder was just so bad, right, last year, and there was no succession plan after Matt Ryan left, because, hey, guess what? The same regime with Terry Fontenot running the fucking organization decided to alienate Matt Ryan by pursuing Deshaun Watson. Lost him. There's no succession plan. Desmond Ridder comes in with Marcus Mariota, and they both suck. So Terry never wanted to be in that situation again, and thought that Michael Penix was so good that he just had to take him at number 8, even though you have no defensive ends in terms of edge rushers that are worth a damn, and you need help in the secondary, particularly at cornerback, to help out A.J. Terrell. And you need help at safety, you need help at linebacker. I would take another defensive lineman, another defensive tackle, for God's sake. Hell, even if they had taken Rome Odunze, you know, the excellent Washington receiver, I would have been like, well, I would have liked defense, but I guess they're going really all in on the offense. You're going to play on scoring 35 points a game.
You would have been livid.
I would have been upset, yeah. But yeah, I would have been at least like...
You can only justify it now because you know the alternative, which is a quarterback.
Well, it's a quarterback. It's also a quarterback you're not expected to play. You made a first-round selection, and you expect the guy to be on the bench for at least 2 seasons, if not longer.
Well, I feel
it's
like...
so stupid.
I need to puppet master this conversation a little bit, Graham. So let's walk through the justifications for taking Michael Penix Jr.
Right. And let me be clear before we jump into that. Sorry to cut you off. Let me be clear. I do not hate Michael Penix Jr. I think he's a very talented dude. I think, you know, he's the only guy in college football history since Patrick Mahomes to have back-to-back 4,500-plus passing yard seasons. He's very talented. Throws a beautiful deep ball.
Potential franchise quarterback.
It's not to say he is bad or picking him is bad, But picking him in this context, to me, given where the team is at, and after you just invested all this money in Kirk Cousins, is one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. So that's all. So yeah. So yeah. Please puppet master the rest of this.
Okay. Yeah, it is pretty wild. So the justification for it is, and I don't know if this is Fontenot. I don't know if this is Raheem Morris.
It's definitely Fontenot.
I don't know if this is Arthur Blank. I don't know if it's a combination of all three, but
like, it's a collaboration.
You see the video of the war room afterwards, and no one looked like super stoked. It might have just caught him at a weird time. I don't know, but it was kind of strange. But you know, the reasoning behind it is with Kirk Cousins, they don't plan on picking at number 8 for, you know, a long time.
The sheer audacity allegedly. Of that.
Okay, and sorry. Yes, Graham, okay. I'm setting it up. Okay. You're going to be able to rant and rave and do whatever you want. So franchise quarterbacks don't come around every day. That's what you and I preached all the time with Matt Ryan when people would bitch and complain about him and just say, we don't realize how lucky we are. And then we saw the Desmond Ridder era. We saw the Taylor Heineke era.
Marcus Mariota.
I forgot about, I blacked that out. Like, we see how dark it can be. So despite the fact that we went out and paid Kirk Cousins this much money, it's guaranteed for 2 years, $100 million for Kirk. He is 36. He is coming off a torn Achilles. This at least gives us insurance that were he to get hurt again, it's not just a complete wasted season or two. Like, imagine he gets hurt week 4. Look at Aaron Rodgers this last year with the Jets, where he gets hurt week 1 and like their season's completely screwed. You had a lot of other pieces there with the Jets. You could say we have a lot of other pieces there with the Falcons. We're not done yet, but this at least gives us insurance that if Kirk gets hurt, the season's not a complete waste. So I think that was a big part of it. And also just like not thinking they're going to get a chance to get a guy like this again. All that being said, you know, personally, like I can't remember the last time that my jaw literally dropped. Like when I saw Michael Penix Jr., it was just, I could not believe that actually happened. That was beyond crazy to me. You know, I'm the ultimate homer, Graham. I'm going to just hope against hope that this works out. And like, you know, there's a little bit of justification and like
what's the
reassurances and the fact that no defensive player was taken until 15. I don't think there are any like complete game breakers. There's not a Micah Parsons in this draft.
But we don't know that. That's the thing. That's what everybody thinks, but we don't know that. Latu could be a beast. Dallas Turner could be a beast.
A guy we get in the second round could be a beast.
It's entirely possible. We have no idea.
So, but before we get onto the crazy, it's entirely possible that, look, Terry Fontenot, Raheem Morris, they know football a lot more than us.
I am beginning to think they don't. I think they know a lot more.
They do.
Well, they don't know how to build a team. And that's clearly evident. And maybe not Raheem, but
Graham,
it's incredible.
Graham, your team. I got a joke before.
Okay.
Your team would be nothing but offensive linemen
and defensive
DNs and like zero skill position players.
So you'd rather have a bunch of skill position players but no defensive ends that are worth a shit.
Who would your quarterback be? Graham Waldron drafted a team.
No, I imagine... No, quarterback is the most important position, but it's not the only position. You win by attacking the quarterback, and you win by protecting the quarterback. This regime, under Terry Fontenot's stewardship, has no conception of how to build an NFL roster. They draft skill position players when you don't have a quarterback, and now they draft a quarterback when you already paid a quarterback. Hundreds of millions of dollars. No one does this for a reason, because it doesn't work. You could have allocated those funds if you love Michael Penix so much, go get him. That's fine. But don't get Kirk Cousins, too. You could have allocated those funds to make a real run at Danielle Hunter, Legarius Sneed, anyone to help what you need in the secondary and in the defensive line. And they just... I understand Terry's point of view of saying we don't want to reach for a knee, but you can't ignore it. You can't sit there and ignore it for 4 years in a row. He is a moron. He is sending this. He has made this team worse. He has made this team worse in terms of how he is built in the draft. I think he's a very good evaluator of free agent talent, but he does not know how to build a team. Name one guy he's drafted defensively that's worth a shit.
Cornerback last year.
Phillips?
Yeah.
He's fine.
Clark Phillips?
He's okay.
Good. He's good.
But he's drafted 11 defensive players, and none of them have been like high-impact players. Troy Anderson is a loser.
Give me all 11.
Zach Harrison? Don't know.
He's okay.
But we don't know. Like, is he going to pan out? We don't know.
He's got potential.
Richie Grant? Meh.
Bad.
Yeah. Arnold Ebiketie? Made some strides last year, but he's not like a game wrecker.
Not there yet.
Troy Anderson? Sucks. That was a total reach in the second round. Darren Hall, fourth round.
Wasn't he our punt and kick returner?
I have no idea, but you don't know either. Like, loser. Taquan Graham. Good. Nothing. He dropped that fumble against the Chargers.
You remember one play.
But what else has he done?
He's a really good player.
Is he a really good player?
He's a really good defensive tackle.
I think he's very, very pedestrian. Below average. Ogundje. Done nothing. You also got D'Angelo Malone, outside linebacker.
He's done nothing. He's not good.
Done nothing. We could keep trying to find all the players we draft, but no one is memorable. No one does anything special. No one is very good. He can't draft any defensive players so far to save his ass. And he refuses, for some reason, to ignore edge or defense in the first round. And his talent evaluators suck. His scouts suck at evaluating good defensive talent, too. And he acts like we'll never pick top 10 again. Well, newsflash, man. I don't know about top 10, but there's a reason Kirk Cousins hasn't won more than one playoff game, and it's not Kirk Cousins' fault. It's because he never had a really good defense. He had good defensive pieces, but not a good defense. Our ceiling, because of this pick to me, and beyond, is winning the division. We won't win a playoff game. That is it, because this guy does not know how to evaluate defensive talent in the draft. He sucks at roster construction, and I cannot get over how you give all this money to Cousins and then draft the quarterback. It makes all his justifications for it could be a franchise guy. You can't pass that up. Well, you know what? Just pick a lane. Either go with Kirk or go with Penix. And if you felt like Penix was too good to pass up, go with Penix. It's very simple. He has just completely overthought the situation and ruined our franchise, which is already pretty ruined. There's no rising from the ashes here. We stay in the ashes. Well, we suck.
I wasn't planning on playing devil's advocate this much, but let me ask you this. You said he doesn't know how to evaluate or draft defensive players, right?
In the draft. I'm not talking about free agency.
Right. Yeah. So why would you want him drafting a defensive player?
Because we need defensive players.
But he doesn't know how to evaluate
Well, he shouldn't be the general manager then.
Okay, that's fair.
I think he's a bad GM. Like, every pick doesn't make sense. He does not pick to build a team. He picks like it's fantasy football. He doesn't think about what he's doing and how it impacts. I'm sure he is, but the pick doesn't reflect that. He doesn't think about what he's doing and how that's going to impact the rest of the roster. He's just like, that's a really good player. That's the best player, I think. Let's get him. He doesn't think about how that affects the overall roster construction. He's a fool.
That's the biggest thing, is like, this one does hurt because we know we're drafting a guy who, if everything goes right, he's not playing this year. So, like, at least last year, it's like Bijan, monster. Like, we love that kid. And like, he's going to be awesome this year. Drake London, nice player. Kyle Pitts, like, the potential's still there for him to be great. So had we taken that wide receiver, like, I guarantee, like, you would be having this exact same brand.
I'd be upset
about how terrible Fontenot is.
He is.
But if you look at it, it'd be like, okay, that was actually a need. And Kirk Cousins would be happy as hell. So that's the biggest thing to me, is that we spent all this money on Kirk, who is like a known asset. And now we've instantly alienated him to where, like, he came here because, like, we gave him a long-term commitment that Minnesota wouldn't give him.
Right.
And now, you know, I think they told him we might draft a quarterback, but, you know, we're expecting, like, Bo Nix in the third round.
Bo Nix went in the first round.
Or something like that. Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. Like, we screwed over the Vikings.
Denver.
We screwed over Denver as well. But that's their problem. But, yeah, I mean, this pick is crazy. As Sam Crochet on the text thread I just saw said, there's a 0-9% chance we look like geniuses. Like, something happens with Kirk. Penix becomes the next
even still,
Mahomes.
But even still, you have no defense. Your defense sucks.
Well,
It's bad. And I'm telling you,
we have
a tougher schedule than we had last year.
Our defense was pretty good last year.
Gave up 4 game-winning drives last year. You know why? Because we didn't have anyone who could get back there and sack the quarterback.
Well, and also, Graham, because our offense sucked and couldn't stay on the field.
But we gave up multiple game-winning touchdown drives at him. I know that is a factor, but you got to have a defense that it's not... If something keeps happening, it's not an anomaly. 4 times, it's Tampa Bay, Carolina, can't remember the other two, but they happened. 4 times this happened. And Minnesota with Josh Dobbs, that was another one, where you couldn't get off the field.
Right, but that's
a bad defense.
Last year, we would be in the playoffs if we had adequate quarterback play. It wasn't the defense at all.
It also could have been the playoffs, and I agree with that.
Our defense kept us around,
but they faded. You need that game wrecker at the end of the game, like a John Abraham, to come in there and make the big play to save the game. You need a closer, and the Falcons don't have one, and they have not addressed it. And until we address it, we will never contend.
So do you think Dallas Turner was that game breaker?
He could have been. I think Latu is the most balanced out of all of the defensive ends. I think he's one of the best in run defense, and I think he's a really fluid pass rusher from what I could tell from the tape that I watched. I think Dallas Turner could have been a game. I think he's even better against the run. I don't think he's as good of a pass rusher as Latu, but I think he's better against the run. He's still a serviceable pass rusher.
Yeah.
Terry, for some reason, does not give a shit about making the defense better. He picks and chooses these flashy little toys and says, look at me. I don't think he knows how to run a professional football organization. They've been 7-10 every year under his stewardship.
But I mean, you got to look at it like this is like a organizational thing that goes back years and years and years, like way before Terry, like where this is falconing. Well, this is a thing we do.
Yes,
it's like it's part of the culture. I thought we were changing that culture.
We're not.
It just hasn't happened yet.
But so. I will say this. I mean, I'm going to use Thomas Dimitroff as a positive here, which I never thought I would do. But Thomas Dimitroff knew how to build a team. He started it when he came over. He started it with getting Matt Ryan and getting Sam Baker, fortifying the trenches. Even though Sam Baker wasn't great, he was serviceable, and Matt Ryan was your franchise quarterback. Then he expanded. Then he was like, now we've got our franchise quarterback. We need to add on a superstar receiver to really blow this up. You got Roddy and Julio and Tony Gonzalez. That made us a formidable franchise that got to NFC title games. You know, and he and then in the Super Bowl run, he addressed the defense. He got Deion Jones, he got Desmond Trufant. You know, he went out and built a team. Now the back half of his career was trash. But even in that, he couldn't pick a defensive end to save his ass.
Second round pick. We just need to punt on second round picks for forever.
But you can find such great value in the second round if you know what you're doing.
But we never do.
I know that's a problem. But even in the back end of his career, Thomas also found guys like Foye Oluokun. Great linebacker.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what the hell has Terry done except draft these skill position guys in areas that we don't need? He like does not care about what we need. He just cares about what he wants. And you can't build a team this way.
I'll counter your defensive. Jalen Hawkins, guy we got in the 7th round last year, possible starter this year.
Yeah, he's solid, but you still don't have like an impact defensive player that he has procured from the draft.
I would call that an impact
player. But like a guy that's like performing at a high level where you're like, that's a stud. The best guy we had last year was that guy I can't remember, the undrafted free agent. My boy.
Landman.
Yeah.
Come on, Graham.
Sorry. Landman was a beast, but he was an undrafted free agent.
He found him. Who do you think signed him?
He was a free agent.
Who do you think signed him?
Terry.
That's great value.
That is great value. But he just ignored. Do you not agree that he ignores the defense? Feels like they're the redheaded stepchild under his stewardship.
Well, no. Last year, he attacked the hell out of it in free agency.
But the draft. I'm talking about the draft.
Yeah, I think he's taken... He wants to get proven talent through free agents. So they need to bring back Bud Dupree, your boy Calais, ASAP.
Those are your best defensive ends.
When they're both free agents still, so like...
But we're going to get the same results from last year. It's
the defense wasn't that bad last year,
It wasn't
year,
very good. If you look at
the... It was a top 15 defense.
But our schedule sucked. We're playing a much harder schedule this year. They will be exposed. Mark my words. They will be exposed. We're not playing Arizona and shitty teams like that.
I mean,
we're playing the Chiefs.
Like, look at it logically. I know you're really upset right now, but like
there's no logic to this.
I don't think Dallas Turner like, if you think our defense is going to suck this year, no matter what, I don't think throwing Dallas Turner in makes us a top five defense.
No, but it helps. You start building something. You find a guy that you can start building around. So he doesn't have to be the all-time answer. I would take 7 or 8 sacks a year from him and good run defense, and that would be fine. That would be like a good above-average player. That'd be like the equivalent of a Jake Matthews on your defensive line. We don't have that except for Grady.
Is Dallas Turner in his rookie season better than a combination of Bud Dupree and Calais Campbell?
I would say yes.
That seems crazy.
I think he'll have more sacks than both of them combined last season.
That seems crazy.
I think he's going to have a great season. I think Latu's going to have a great season.
I don't think that's logical, Graham. Two proven vets versus
who are getting
a
older.
Rookie.
But Dallas Turner has the juice, man. Did you watch any Alabama games last year? This guy's all over the field.
I heard Saban talking about him, but like it's also, you know, 14 other teams passed on him.
Yeah, and maybe he sucks. That's the thing. The draft is a
crapshoot.
But you have to give yourself the best chance to win.
If you could get proven vets.
But proven vets aren't going to take you over the top unless you're getting like a Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins could take you over the top, but if he doesn't have a good defense, he can't win. That's proven throughout his career. He's not good enough to be a Mahomes. He needs a good D, an above-average defense. And this was the year to finally do that. Instead, we splurge on Darnell Mooney. You know? We don't do anything in free agency of note to vastly improve a defensive unit that is trash overall.
At the end of the day, I do not agree with drafting Penix, to be clear.
You don't draft a guy in that number 8 that's supposed to sit for maybe 3 years.
Yes.
It's insane.
We agree on that point.
It's insane.
But I also don't think there were any game wreckers in this draft. And I know they tried to trade back.
They tried to go get Latu, apparently.
Nothing
materialized.
Yeah. So I don't think this decision like wrecks the franchise forever, but it's like problematic because like,
what are you going to do if Latu or Dallas Turner have like 14 sacks next year and they're just sitting there waiting for us?
It might happen. You know, it happens every year. People pass on players all the time.
But we passed on, like, think about the Kirk, the Kyle Pitts here. We passed on Penei Sewell. He's the best like left tackle in football now.
Yeah, no.
That's a foundational piece.
We might as well just trade all our first round picks and second round.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm at a loss for words. Like, Terry passes proven talent like a Penei Sewell for a reach like Kyle Pitts.
Yeah.
You don't build a house by putting fancy statues in the living room before you built the walls and the roof, but not for Terry. I like to see what his house looks like, what the foundation's like. It's unreal.
I did love, before we started recording today, Graham and I listened to Terry get interviewed by Dukes and Bell on 92.9 The Game. And I know Mike Bell was just like going crazy on Twitter last night. And of course, like, you can't do what Graham's doing.
You can't do that
if Terry Fontenot's sitting in front of your face.
You might lose your job.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's a grown man. He's not an idiot. I could tell you he's not an idiot.
Terry's not an idiot.
He's a very smart, accomplished man, has gotten a lot further in life than you or I will ever get.
Sure, but would you argue that he knows how to build an NFL roster?
I think he knows it a lot better than you or I.
Would you or I or anyone with a brain do what he did last night? The consensus...
You and I would not have drafted it, but that does not mean that we would have made a correct decision either.
But this is unprecedented. No one's ever done anything like this.
I would have just looked at Mel Kiper's best available and drafted number one. That's worked for me in fantasy baseball.
Then we probably would have gotten Dallas Turner and been fine. Yeah, he overthought it, man. I used to think Arthur Smith was the problem, and he was the guy being like, yeah, give me all these offensive players, but I think Terry's the problem. Well, I was all for giving Terry a chance. He's ruined that for me.
Well, let's
now
see what happens. So this is going to be... Well, let me finish that initial thought from the Dukes and Bell interview, where the one part that I really enjoyed was like Mike Bell finally... They were kind of being pretty nice about it. And then Mike Bell like pushed back pretty hard on him, saying like the time to do this move would have been when you had Matt Ryan and you could have drafted Justin Fields to, you know, like learn from Matt Ryan. It would have been a beautiful succession plan. And Terry pretty quickly was like, well, how did that Justin Fields draft pick work out? And they're like, well, not very good.
Yeah, but I think also Fields was in a bad situation with a bad offensive line, no receivers for a while. He played really well the last 8 games of the year. He's got something to prove. I think
maybe if he sat under Matt Ryan, it's a different story. But like, I think like with quarterbacks, it's like it's just such a huge investment, such an important piece. Like if you have a guy you love and like they
then like, just take him Penix, and don't do
better
Kirk.
Be. But I mean, maybe they didn't think he'd be there at eight. I don't know, but like he is the fourth quarterback taken as well.
It's so dumb.
I don't know, man.
I don't know.
It's crazy. So, but it's gonna be interesting tonight for this podcast, where we're gonna watch the second round and do a live broadcast of our reactions to whatever we do. So, like, if they take, it's got to be defense, right? 43.
I think another quarterback might be picked. I think a running back would be great. And that's another thing. Like, Terry took a running back after he already had a running back that ran for 1,000 yards last year. Now, Bijan's better than Algier, but it's like, it's not necessary. The other parts of your team have massive bloody holes, and you just continue to plug it with shit.
I mean, what they're saying with this draft pick is that our team right now is ready to win a Super Bowl.
That's bullshit. That is the biggest little bullshit I've ever heard.
That's what they're saying.
Then they are more deluded than I could possibly imagine.
And then Kirk's going to be gone, and Penix is going to be a stud at 26, 27.
Don't you love that Terry last night? He was like, you know, it'd be great if Michael Penix didn't play for the first 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I was like, you are stupid.
That's not what you want to hear.
No. I'm like, God. All right, so we're going to get more into the politics of that, but we're going to have a very special guest joining us right now to actually break down Michael Penix and break down who we could take in the future rounds of the draft. This is a guy who knows college football a hell of a lot better than we do. So we're going to take a break and bring on Eric from the South End Zone podcast.
Hey everyone, it's Ryan from No Credentials Required to talk to you about one of our newest partners at Belly Up Sports, SeatGeek. Yeah, live sports is great on television, but the feeling of being at the arena is a priceless experience. That's why our friends at SeatGeek are there to help you find the best tickets at the best prices. Not only can you get tickets to sporting events, but you can also get tickets to concerts, comedy shows, musicals, and more. Search for your desired event now at SeatGeek.com, enter promo code BellyUpSports at checkout, and you save $20 off your first purchase. SeatGeek. Life's an event. We have the tickets.
All right, we're back from the break. As promised, we've got Eric from the South End Zone podcast. Eric, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. How are you doing?
Doing all right. I'm a little angry with this Michael Penix thing, but we're really happy to have you on board. We're kind of like the inverse of you. We watch a lot of NFL, but don't watch a ton of college football.
Yep.
So we're really happy to have someone on here who knows what the hell he's talking about.
Yeah, I mean, most people watch a lot of one or the other. Very few people watch a lot of both because there's only so many hours in the weekend, I guess.
But, yeah, we can't ignore our wives and girlfriends for that long.
Yeah, I like staying married.
Well, first off, what was your reaction to the Michael Penix pick overall for the Falcons?
I'm not even sure what the adjective. I was stunned, shocked, gobsmacked. It didn't make any sense to me. And then, you know, today, after having a night to sleep on it and think about it, it still really doesn't. Love the player. I'm okay with the value in terms of a team taking him eighth overall, because I do think he has a chance to carve out a pretty nice career in the league. I just don't like the fit. It's incompatible to me with signing a guy and guaranteeing him $100 million to take someone at that spot, knowing that you really don't want him to play for 2 years. Like, if he plays, you know, something's gone wrong. You know, because it's not like they don't have holes at other places and
right.
spots that they could address and maybe help themselves win sooner, right? My thing is, I don't know that the 2024 Atlanta Falcons are better right now than they were 24 hours ago.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest problem we have, is that, like, you're drafting a guy eight overall to sit for at least 2 years, and that doesn't help when you really need edge in corner. Yes.
Yeah, you sign Kirk Cousins and you guarantee him $100 million up to 4 years. That's a win now move, which is fine. You know, a lot of teams do that, and if that's a plan, then you should execute that plan. And this is just sort of inconsistent with that, because you know, Michael Penix, for as much as I like him, doesn't help you win now, I don't think.
I mean, it was to the point where when the pick happened, I was kind of thinking, I was like, maybe this is like NBA where like the Hawks drafted Luka Doncic, but a trade was in place. I was like, surely this isn't like the final resolution here. There's got to be something else going on. Like it was, I've never had a moment, despite being a Falcons fan forever, where like I was just shocked. My jaw was dropped. It's just, it makes zero sense.
The explanations, and I don't know if it was the press conference was last night or this morning, they honestly didn't help me make any more sense of it. The only thing I've seen that makes a lick of sense is the tampering investigation. And if they expect that they'll have some draft pick penalties for that next year, combined with maybe they just don't like next year's crop of quarterbacks and they feel like, hey, they need to address the longer term plan a quarterback a year early than they might otherwise. The whole thing's weird to me.
I would have just loved to do just pick Penix and just say, let's roll, let's develop. Like, that's fine. Like, it's a pretty young core overall.
Yeah, that's sort of the thing is, you know, you have the win now move with signing a guy like Kirk Cousins to the contract you signed him to, knowing you already have some pieces in place on offense. But that's, you know, it seems either go to win now or like, hey, we're kind of building up the roster, right? Quarterback in the future. Very few teams do try to do both at the same time, probably because it ends up like this.
I've never seen that before because it messes up roster construction.
Even the stuff with like the Packers, right? He compared it to Jordan Love. Well, that's not, I don't think that's really the same thing. Like, the Packers were coming off an NFC title game. They didn't have holes all over the defense. They had some uncertainty at quarterback because they didn't know if Aaron Rodgers was going to come back and play or go host Jeopardy or whatever. And they picked a guy in the 20s, right? They gave us, I think, a fourth rounder to move up a handful of spots in the 20s. That's not the same thing, I don't think.
No.
So I don't, and I hate it for Michael Penix because I think he is good enough to play in the league. He might be, I mean, you can make a case he's the most ready to go play an NFL game right now, outside of Caleb Williams.
Let's talk about him for a second and switch gears, because now, like, you know, the fact is we have him. So tell us, what are the best things about Michael Penix that he brings immediately? Why is he so NFL ready?
Well, the arm, you know, he can make all the throws. He's very good on the deep and intermediate to the outer parts of the field. He doesn't attack the middle as much, and I don't know if that's a function of probably the offensive scheme at Washington. But, you know, going through the progressions, having the three receivers he had at Washington helped a great deal in that because, you know, and a really, really good offensive line where you have 4 or 5 seconds to go through those progressions. But, you know, in terms of getting in the right play, making the right read, making the right decision, he can get a little bit squirrely with the footwork. Sometimes it bites him and sometimes it doesn't, because if, you know, you watch the Texas game in the college football playoffs and his feet were all over the place. The throws he was making were, they were impressive, just, you know, if the footwork is clean, but you're looking, you're like, man, he's not stepping into it. He's falling back. He's leaning sideways. It's just all arm. And it really kind of adds a degree of difficulty. And he's still pulling off some just preposterous throws in that game. So the arm talent, as weird as I think that term is very, very real with him. I mean, he can spin it, and he's, you know, obviously he's experienced. I mean, he was in the same high school class as Trevor Lawrence. You know, he played college football for 6 years, so he's not going to see it probably a whole lot that is new to him in terms of a defensive formation or, you know, hey, where's the pressure coming from, a coverage, what have you. So,
how does one play college football for 6 years with a couple injured seasons there? Was that it?
Yeah, so his first 4 years at Indiana, he had a season-ending surgery or a season-ending injury. All four of those years, even his best year in 2020, when Indiana was actually good. He's had each ACL repaired. So between his age and the injury history, I'm sure some teams were scared off, but he's played the last two seasons healthy at Washington and won a lot of games. And, you know, he threw for the most yards in FBS the last two seasons. So that this last year, I think, was really important for him in showing that, yeah, I can stay on the field. And, you know, the further in the rear view he puts those season enders behind him, I think the better off he is. But it's still weird to me. I don't view him as a guy that you need to draft and develop for 2 years before he sees the field. Like, yeah. I think he's ready before that.
What do you think about his mental makeup? I mean, obviously he got to the national title game last season. Like you mentioned, you know, the best passer in terms of yardage in FBS the last 2 years. So how is he mentally, though?
Well, so I don't know a ton about the guy, like, on a you know, personal level, you know, off the field. But I would have to think that there's definitely some determination and resilience there, given that he did come back from those injuries repeatedly. Tearing up your knee that's kind of a bear, and that's a long process, and to do it twice, I think probably speaks to, you know, sort of the mental makeup. I know his coaches and teammates at Washington raved about his leadership. They probably do that for every quarterback. I'm not sure. You know, that's a grain of salt type thing.
But, yeah, right.
There really aren't any red flags from a non-physical talent standpoint, as far as I'm aware.
That's good to hear. They also say he has, like, and I've seen his deep balls. I mean, they're pretty incredible. But you would echo that he is the best deep ball in the draft.
Probably. I mean, yeah, probably. He's got the prettiest. Like Joe Milton from Tennessee throws a gorgeous deep ball, huge arm, but he's not very good otherwise, to be honest. You know, and Caleb Williams throws a really good deep ball. Drake May didn't really throw a ton of them, but I think he probably can. But yeah, Penix had a lot more deep shots, kind of at or outside the numbers than everyone else, and it was a strength for him.
Cool. Well, I mean, if he does see the field this year, I mean, we're pulling for him. Like we said, we don't dislike the guy. Or the pick, just the context in which all this is happening. So if he does play, I mean, I'm excited to see him, but I'm also like, oh God, this is nuts. So, you know, the second round's happening as we speak. You know, our big needs are edge and corner. I would argue defensive line, we probably need to get another guy too, in the trenches. Who are some guys that the Falcons could target that you think can provide good value for this team heading forward as we enter the weekend of the draft?
So defensively, there's a couple of guys that I was sort of surprised to pick last night. Most notably, Johnny Newton from Illinois. He's an interior D lineman. And Cooper DeJean from Iowa, in the corner. I don't know that either of them will be there. I'd be very surprised, actually, if either of them were there at 43, when I think the Falcons are slated to pick, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's right.
Corner at 43, you're probably looking at Kamari Lassiter from Georgia, and maybe Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama.
I was going to ask about Kool-Aid. I remember him getting picked on a few years ago in that Georgia-Alabama, what was it, the title? I think the national title game. Has, what do you think of him as an NFL corner?
I mean, I think he can play multi. He can play inside. He can play outside. You know, he's fast, physical, ball hawk. I thought he might go towards the end of the first, but early second. I would think if he's there at 43, he's someone who can, you know, is probably a day one starter for Atlanta.
That'd be nice.
Same thing. same thing with last year. Cooper DeJean, I like a lot because he could play inside and outside. He could probably play safety if they needed him to. He can return punts. He provides a lot of versatility on the back end of a defense, and he's just a playmaker. Like his college career is just littered with, you know, making plays, making the right play, being in the right spot. You know, if you ever watch Iowa, it's not particularly pretty football, but defensively, like, those dudes are never out of position. They don't miss open field tackles, and he's kind of personifies every bit of that. So those are the three guys. If one of them is available at 43, probably want to jump on. And I don't know if they like him or not, but Enos Rakestraw from Missouri, pretty good player. I maybe have him a tick below those other three guys, but you know, I wouldn't hate him in the second round. In terms of the back end, as well as TJ Tampa from Iowa State, who I haven't watched as much as some of these other guys. I live in Georgia also, so I watch a lot of SEC and ACC football, you know, more so than the Big 12. But those are some guys kind of on the back end of the defense. And if they wanted to maybe trade up into the second round, I have them for 43rd, and then they got 74 and 79. If they wanted to wait one of those third rounders, Mike Sainer still from Michigan is sort of like Cooper Jean. He's not a real big guy. He's fast enough, but he's not a blazer. But he just makes plays. Mm-hmm. Like, he's always near the ball. He's always finishing. And he was a, you know, a kind of a key leader on that Michigan defense that won the national championship. So I think he's a guy, because of the size, they might lean towards putting him in the slot. He's probably like 5'10".
We're all for more ball hawks at this point, just because we only really had one guy who was getting picks last year. It was Jesse Bates, our safety. So we could definitely use someone in, you know, at corner who can also has a nose for the ball. I would be interested also, as we're kind of wrapping up here, anyone later rounds, fifth round, sixth round, any position that you think could be, you know, a diamond in the rough?
I love these. So at edge, a diamond in the rough, I'm going to say this just because he's not particularly highly ranked, but he's very, very young, is Jonah Ellis from Utah. I want to say he's 21. A little raw. He might be more of a project as opposed to, you know, 2024 contributor. But, you know, Utah, if you ever watch them, they, similar to Iowa, they play a really kind of in-your-face, tough, disciplined defense. And he was a good player for them. And maybe Xavier Thomas from Clemson is not as much a longer-term project, but kind of, you know, prototypical-ish size, but I don't know that he's as fast and quick as a lot of edge rushers, which is probably why he's a little lower ranked. But I view him that, you know, he could be serviceable. I don't think he would ever be like a multi-time Pro Bowler or anything, but he could probably help them with the pass rush. If they're looking for pass rush, they might, you know, in these next three picks they got, 43, 74, 79, they might have better luck finding pass rush from the interior with a guy like Braden Fisk from Florida State or Michael Hall Jr. from Ohio State. Those guys are really kind of quick, explosive, powerful guys on the inside that can push the pocket up the middle. Ruka Roruro from Clemson is another kind of personal favorite of mine. I think he's a little bit underrated.
Live right now, the Falcons actually just traded up to 35.
They're about to make a pick.
So tell us what let's see.
Interesting. So the Falcons got the Cardinals 2024 third round pick, and they got our sixth round pick. So The pick's about to come in. Maybe it was one of those guys you were just talking about. Let's see.
They looked excited in the war room, unlike last night.
Last night, everybody looked like they were at a funeral procession, with the exception of Terry Fontenot. He was jacked. Let's see.
Okay, well, if they're taking now, I didn't mention him before because I thought he'd be gone by 43, but Johnny Newton from Illinois would be maybe their best choice here as far as interior pass rush.
Let's see.
Come on, Johnny Newton. See what we got.
Some poor Falcons fans there waving their flags.
They look excited.
They look excited. Can't tell who that is.
Who the hell's this guy?
I think that's Warwick Dunn.
Really? No.
Oh, Andre Rison. My bad. Let's see here. Okay, so the guy you just mentioned, Ruke, the guy from Clemson, the defensive tackle.
Yep. Yeah, Ruke Roro.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so I'm surprised he went before Johnny Newton because a lot of people thought Johnny Newton might be like a top 20, 25 type guy. And I don't think a whole lot of people expected Ruke Roro to go quite so early, but no, he's a player I would go on. I thought maybe they could trade up from one of those third round picks and go after him in the second, but I guess they're not waiting, so. He'll help them up front.
Well, it's interesting, too, because we have, like, two solid defensive... Well, one's excellent, you know, Grady Jarrett. Also out of Clemson on the interior. And then you got David Onyemata, who came over from the Saints last year, who both were probably, like, the best part of the... Definitely both were best part of the defensive line, I would say, overall. But both are coming off injuries, so maybe that was a forward-thinking move here.
Yeah. Yeah, now as far as the edge, other than Ellis, who I don't think will go for at least a couple of rounds here, I think the best edge rusher available like right now, if they wanted to move up again, would be Braylon Trice from Washington. Mm-hmm. So if they're looking to address that as well tonight, he might be – I don't think he would be there at 79 or 74, whichever one they have left. They'd probably have to come up again, but
so there's
Xavier Thomas probably would.
So at the end of the day, like, there's still a lot of talent out there where, like, if we just hit hard on these positions of need, the draft isn't completely screwed based off last night.
Yeah, I mean, I think they can still recover somewhat and get some contributors on defense picking where they're picking. Even at 109, I think they can get someone who can at least get snaps this year or next.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Eric, thanks so much for the analysis. We'll keep that in mind as we watch the draft this weekend. Tell the fine people out there where to find your show.
Yeah, South End Zone Podcast. We're on YouTube at South End Zone Pod. On pretty much all kind of social platforms. We live stream on YouTube and Twitter once a week. The night varies based on schedule. My co-host Jason travels quite a bit, but all college football all the time. In season, there's a little more emphasis on really picking the games and the lines, sort of the wagering aspects, and then in the off season, really more about football. In the spring, we'll load up on guests a lot. Everyone from a kid at Arizona State who runs a Sun Devils blog to Cole Kubelik from the SEC Network. So, you know, everything in between. So any college fans can check those out and see if we've gotten a chance to sit down with someone and talk about your team.
Cool. Well, Eric, thanks so much for joining us. Hope you have a great night, and we'll do this again sometime. If you ever need anyone to talk about any Atlanta professional sports, just give us a shout. Sure. I don't know how that'd be relevant to your show, but we're here.
We are your guys.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, so thanks again to Eric for coming on the show. Be sure to check out his podcast. If you like college football, and for the people that complained about us not talking about college football, you got a good college football podcast right there. So that was cool, having the draft pick happen live
while we're recording. Yeah. A trade-up.
And then while we're talking to the college football expert, who just mentioned him like 2 minutes before that.
Yeah. That was good.
Yeah. Doesn't happen very often for guys like us.
So we took a defensive player.
Defensive tackle.
That's good.
Still would have liked an edge, but as we mentioned, we're taking a little break there off air. You know, Grady's getting older. Onyemata's not exactly young. He battled some injuries last year. We always know Grady's coming back from that ACL tear, so...
And the Commanders took Newton right after.
So I guarantee that guy's going to be better than the guy we got just because it's the Falcons. But
that's the way it goes.
We'll see. Like that, the Clemson pedigree.
That is though. Crazy, the back-to-back D tackles.
Yeah.
No, I'll take Clemson over Illinois all day. You know, we've got the Grady Jarrett.
Yeah, Grady Jarrett connection.
Connection, mentor. Mentee.
It's going to take a long time to figure out how to say that guy's name, though.
Oh, yeah.
We're just going to call him David O until we practice
good
that.
Good on Eric for being able to
he
do that.
He nailed it.
Yeah.
I was like, man, you know your
this
stuff.
This guy knows
this
his
guy
stuff.
Really knows his
that
stuff.
That was by far the most educational segment that in the history of Atlanta
this,
Zone.
This 6 years, 7 years I've been doing this.
to go from the early days of Gabe Peacock... guess where all he said was that's crazy when you ask when you say how old someone is to
he'd
that
say it, and then he's we've like, come that's crazy
we've come a long ways
we've come a long way so last thing I really want to talk about with this Michael Penix pick though is just the ripple effect right that this has on the locker room, which I think is something that, you know, we mentioned it a little bit earlier, but something that I don't think a lot of people are talking about as much as they should. You know, Kirk Cousins kept going around during his introductory press conference when he was on Sunday Night Baseball this week. And pretty much any time he talked to the media, he kept saying, like, the big three things are having, like, an owner, coach, GM, and quarterback on the same page. If you have that, everything's going to be fine. That's how you win. And clearly they were not on the same page. So it's like the core tenet of Kirk Cousins has been violated. And that's going to that I mean, we already talked about he's pissed off, but it's like it goes beyond being pissed off to me. I think he's I mean, there's going to be no mentorship to Michael Penix. He's not going to mentor him at all. That's not how it works in the NFL, but it's really not going to work.
I don't think he's that guy. Like, I mean,
no, he's not going to do shit.
They have to pay him for 2 years. Like,
but he's not going to mentor Penix. He's not going to say, hey, Mike, come into, you know, let's break down game film together. Like, they'll share the quarterback room. He's not going to do shit for
him. I don't know, man.
He's a threat.
He's such a wholesome guy.
He's a threat. You don't know what he's like behind closed doors. None of us do. And that's just not...
I've seen the Netflix show.
Okay. That's still not behind closed doors, though. That's still being filmed.
He shops knows... at Kohl's.
He knows that...
I get what you're saying.
He knows that this guy's coming for him. Everybody can play nice, but he knows he's coming for him. And he thinks the organization has... lied and not been very forthright about what the hell they were going to do.
And, like, I mean, yeah, it's instant quarterback controversy because, you know, the fans in Atlanta, as soon as, if Kirk throws three picks in week four, you're going to be freaking out.
No, I'll be fine. Because I know the track record for Kirk Cousins.
Let me get my notepad out.
Yeah, I'll be fine. Because I know Kirk Cousins' track record. The guy throws for 4,000 yards every year and at least 28 touchdowns. Like, he's going to be fine. He was having the best year of his career last year.
What if he throws 20 picks this year?
Okay, then maybe he sucked. But I was fine with taking the chance on him because the track record's there.
Yeah.
Everybody can complain about he doesn't win the playoffs, but he's never had a good defense. And again, he's walked into a situation right now where he's got to be feeling snake bitten, even with the pick of David O from Clemson, being like, why the hell... Then we get another guy on the defense. Like, imagine if we had taken that guy, David O, and then we had gotten Latu. Then I'd be like, oh, maybe our defense is starting to come together. We're building something here. If you're going to double up on something, double up on the defensive line. Don't double up on quarterback.
What if we draft nothing but defense the rest of the draft?
Great. I would like to draft a tackle at some point.
Even though...
Or a guard.
But, like, according to you...
I would be fine to say two defensive linemen, two cornerbacks, and a linebacker.
But Fontenot doesn't know how to draft defense. So
he doesn't.
That would mean our entire draft is a waste.
Probably. Until someone proves that it's not, I will be skeptical of his decision-making.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy who went after David O, Newton, was someone that Eric was saying is better. So I want to trust Eric's judgment because Terry's judgment has been shit so far.
That's fair. I mean, Eric sounds like he knows what he's talking about. What you got, Terry?
What you got, Terry? But what do you think this does to the locker room overall in terms of, like, when they show up for minicamp and, more importantly, training camp, what the hell are people thinking? If you're just, let's say you're Bijan Robinson, your second year, what are you thinking? What's in your mind right now?
Well, I think Kirk's going to handle it very professionally, and, like, he's not going to say anything openly bad about Penix, and, you know, I think the locker room in general will be happy to just know the quarterback position's covered. I think it's only with Kirk that it's an issue. I don't think the rest of the players are going to be too concerned.
You don't think so? I'll be interested to see how Kirk leads, if he's just going to be able to just take it, or if he's, you know, it's going to be a big chip on his shoulder. Hopefully it motivates him.
I think it could be a motivator where he's like going out there just like proving you gave me this money for a reason.
Yeah, I'm going to throw 47 touchdowns.
And hell, I can do both. I can train this guy up, but just like make sure there's no way in hell you're ever going to replace me.
I don't think he's going to train him up, but I get what you're saying. Like, remember what happened with Aaron Rodgers, not to say Cousins is as good as prime Aaron Rodgers, but when they drafted Jordan Love, like, Rodgers exploded and became the MVP again.
Yeah.
You know, like, Kirk was already having the best year of his life until he tore his Achilles last year. I mean, he could really go off. And, you know, even though I've been very critical about these picks, it's like the weapons are there for Kirk. Hopefully Kyle Pitts is healthy and can do something. We know Bijan and Drake are for real NFL players. You know, hopefully it finally comes together, even though it's come together in a way that's very unconventional, very cart before the horse. But I'm very interested to watch the rest of the draft this weekend and see how much of an emphasis we continue to have on the defense, and hopefully that continues. I also wouldn't mind if we can find value in the fourth or fifth round, we get another receiver. I still think the receiving core is a little thin. I'd like to get one more in the draft. I think that's still necessary. And there's still a lot of good receivers out there. So be interesting to watch what Terry does as the draft has its weekend.
That was a lot, Graham.
That was a lot. No Braves talk this week. They're doing fine. We figured we'd just spend the show talking about the Falcons, since this was such an insane thing that happened. And Mr. Jet really needs to go out, so I think we need to wrap up here. The producer's like, producer Jet's like, I gotta go to the bathroom, guys.
Yeah, I'm ready to go play.
Yeah.
Falcons made their pick on air.
Right. Good. It's like, you're done. Stop it. Yeah. Turn it off. All right. Thank you, as always, for listening. I hope you're well. Until next time, rise up, chop on, unite and conquer, and remain true to Atlanta. Hospitamisip. What are you doing, Terry?
Hospitamisip.